Good afternoon. It's Wednesday, the 26th of September 2018, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News, your host today, Mike Robinson, myself, Brian Gerrish. We're also delighted to have Justin Walker from the British Constitution Group with us. And Justin's going to be talking about his experience at the Leave Means Leave conference this past Saturday. So that's going to be extremely interesting. But first of all, Trump.
Yes, indeed, because Trump was speaking at the United Nations General Assembly. And boy, what a bunch of glum faces there were in the audience. So let's see if we can get a clue as to what the problem was.
We are standing up for America and for the American people. And we are also standing up for the world. This is great news for our citizens and for peace-loving people everywhere. We believe that when nations respect the rights of their neighbors and defend the interests of their people, they can better work together to secure the blessings of safety, prosperity, and peace. Each of us here today is the emissary of a distinct culture, a rich history, and a people bound together by ties of memory, tradition, and the values that make our homelands like nowhere else on earth. That is why America will always choose independence and cooperation over global governance, control, and domination. I honor the right of every nation in this room to pursue its own customs, beliefs, and traditions. The United States will not tell you how to live or work or worship. We only ask that you honor our sovereignty in return. For similar reasons, the United States will provide no support in recognition to the International Criminal Court. As far as America is concerned, the ICC has no jurisdiction, no legitimacy, and no authority. The ICC claims near universal jurisdiction over the citizens of every country, violating all principles of justice, fairness, and due process. We will never surrender America's sovereignty to an unelected, unaccountable global bureaucracy. America is governed by Americans. We reject the ideology of globalism, and we embrace the doctrine of patriotism. We recognize the right of every nation in this room to set its own immigration policy in accordance with its national interests, just as we ask other countries to respect our own right to do the same, which we are doing. That is one reason the United States will not participate in the new global compact on migration. Migration should not be governed by an international body unaccountable to our own citizens. Ultimately, the only long-term solution to the migration crisis is to help people build more hopeful futures in their home countries. Make their countries great again.
So, Brian, I don't know what you thought about that, but it seems to me that he was pretty much declaring war on the international, the globalist institutions.
Yes.
And really suggesting that the best way to deal with countries' problems is not interdependence and reliance on people that you have no control over, but actually to take control of your own affairs once again. But to do it in a way which is in a community of nations, this is quite similar, actually, to the type of language that Xi Jinping is using in China. But the point here is it's totally counter to most of the sort of Western heads of state that were sitting in that room. I mean, there are many others than Western heads of state, but the camera, as it was panning around the room during his speech, you know, as it focused on Western heads of state, they all looked very glum.
And I think that's very telling. Trump is a conundrum. What is his actual game? Sometimes it's very difficult to tell. If he hadn't have had the missile strike on Syria, you could have had greater confidence when he's coming out with this sort of thing. But is Syria entitled to run itself as a nation state? That would be a good question. But I believe this expression on faces is very telling, Mike. So when we see heads of government and their representatives looking miserable and glum, they're clearly worried about what's being said in front of them. So is he playing a very clever double game, or is he a maverick, or is he working very hard to bring in some very good changes? I find it difficult to say, but clearly the people in that room are upset by what he's saying.
Absolutely. Now, you asked about Syria. Quite a lot of the speech was given over to Iran, for example, where he's absolutely determined that Iran seems to be the next regime change operation that may well be coming down the pipe. It wasn't just Donald Trump attacking Iran in this speech, but Bolton and others within the administration attacking Iran over the last few days. So clearly the focus is moving towards Iran from Syria as the Syrian war is lost. But he had this to say about migration and immigration and jihadis.
I am pleased to report that the bloodthirsty killers known as ISIS have been driven out from the territory they once held in Iraq and Syria. We will continue to work with friends and allies to deny radical Islamic terrorists any funding, territory, or support, or any means of infiltrating our borders.
So any means of infiltrating our borders, that seems to be his attitude. It's a little bit unfortunate. It's not the attitude of the British government, because as the Telegraph was and others reporting yesterday, Britain grants asylum to 100 White Helmet rescuers and relatives after Syria evacuation. Now, we've been making the point for quite some time in support of Vanessa Bealey in particular, that the White Helmets are not rescuers, that they're fraudulent in many ways, they are propagandists, and in fact they are terrorists. And so we are bringing the insurgents into the UK. No comment from the mainstream media about this at all, no questioning about it at all. But one person who is absolutely questioning it in a very positive way, I think, is Craig Murray. So this is his comment on this. The headline is "Importing Jihadi Terror to the UK, Cui Bono." And I'm just going to spend a couple of minutes on this because it's worth, I recommend everybody goes and reads this article in full. But if I pick a couple of bits out of it, he says, if Osama bin Laden was not sufficient warning that decades of money, arms and other support from a Western security services does not render a jihadi a friend of the West, then the Manchester bomber, Salman Abedi, should have opened British eyes forever to the danger. In collaboration with MI5, Abedi has been fighting in the ongoing proxy war for Western oil interests in Libya before being rescued by the Royal Navy. Back home in Manchester, he carried out an attack of appalling violence against a primarily young and female target group. So it would be very foolish indeed to rely on the fact that the jihadi logistics support and propaganda group, the White Helmets, is largely British government funded, to expect its members, who are now, like Abedi, being brought to the UK to behave as quiet citizens. In ending all funding to the White, he goes on to talk about the Dutch government ending its funding to the White Helmets. He said, in ending all funding to the White Helmets, the Dutch government did not wish to be confrontational towards the other neoconservative governments who are funding and exploiting the propaganda from the White Helmets. Their report was therefore diplomatically phrased. Funding for the White Helmets may have, quotes, inadvertently fallen into the hands of armed extremists, while unacceptable contact between the White Helmets and extreme jihadists was, quote, inevitable in the areas they operated. And he went on to say, which of course is the irony of this, entirely innocent British Muslims face the day-to-day surveillance state harassment of the PREVENT programme, where Muslim students pursuing security studies are reported to the police for reading books on terrorism, and school pupils are reported for expressing opposition to the mass bombing of Libya by NATO or arms sales to Saudi Arabia. Nobody has consciously decided, he said, to import the White Helmets to maintain the internal terrorist threat in the UK. I would actually dispute that. I would say he's being quite generous in that assessment. But anyway, he ends up by saying importing the White Helmets into the UK is obviously nuts if your purpose is to minimise jihadi activity in the UK. So we have to ask, What is the real purpose? Well, I think the real purpose, Brian, is exactly that. It is a conscious decision to import these people in to increase tension and bring more jihadi type material. Yes, exactly. And of course, that justifies greater police presence in certain areas and prevent.
The prevent strategy, and what's in my mind, Mike, is a couple of weeks ago, we were mentioning Colonel Richard Kemp, where he was saying that, yes, it had to be admitted that Britain's security services failed to pick up on the Islamic threat, and that we allowed extremists to come into the country. We didn't pick them up. We didn't do anything with it. And therefore, their ability to cause trouble grew inside this country. But it was all a terrible mistake. So MI5 didn't manage to do it. Border agency didn't manage to do it. MI6 didn't manage to do it. GCHQ apparently couldn't help. The Metropolitan Police Terror Group. It was all a little bit of a mistake. These people came in. And now we've got another group. What screening, what vetting has been done of these people to say that they're safe to bring into this country? What reassurances has the British public been given? Absolutely none. The doors are simply open and they're brought in. Could it be a reward for the fact they've served the British state?
Yes. Now, just getting back to Trump for one second, I just wanted to show the one little piece of his speech that the mainstream media wanted to highlight. So let's have a look at this.
In less than 2 years, my administration has accomplished more than almost any administration in the history of our country. America's so true. Didn't expect that reaction, but that's okay.
So, yes, they laughed at him, but he took it in good spirits, whereas the mainstream media, that their headlines, many of them, the world just laughed at Donald Trump. They were not laughing at Donald Trump by the end. That was the beginning of the speech. They certainly weren't laughing at him by the end of the speech. What was CNN's response? Donald Trump's worldview was laid bare at the UN, and it should worry anyone who understands history. And, of course, they are claiming that producing 1930s style rhetoric. I don't think it's 1930s style rhetoric at all, but clearly the mainstream media, as well as the faces in that room, pretty upset about what he was doing. And that's, I think, the main thing we should take out of it.
And continue to watch him very closely, I think, is the other thing that we need to do.
Yes. Okay, now, media on trial. I do apologise. I have completely failed to put the details of the date and place of this on the slide there. But end of October, Media on Trial will have Andrei Nekrasov, who's the filmmaker from Russia who has made a film on Magnitsky, the Magnitsky Act. If you haven't seen that film yet, I strongly recommend you have a look at it. He will be interviewed by Patrick Henningsen. Vanessa Bailey will be speaking, and then Piers Robinson, Peter Ford, Tim Hayward and Robert Stewart, as usual, at that event. Details on mediaontrial.uk and tickets available from there as well. In fact, the tickets are available from Eventbrite, but the link is on the mediaontrial.uk website on the front page. If you go to that.
We can tweet this out after the news, so we'll put some detail. We will tweet those details out after the news.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Well, let's come to the UK, if there is a United Kingdom left, because, of course, we can see that it's being sold off to the European Union even faster than when we were technically not involved in Brexit. And defence is so important. I think some of our viewers and listeners a little bit wary about engaging with the subject of defence because it's linked to wars, etc. But we're taking this at basic foundations that if this country does not run its own defence, then we don't exist as a nation state, and therefore we can't do anything to correct other areas that people are deeply concerned about. So let's have a look at this Times article here. Defence Chief General Sir Nick Carter wants deeper military union with the French. Now, this is a very, very interesting article. Of course, you can't get to all of it online unless you're a subscriber to the Times. So you can freeze this screen and get at least some of it. But it says Britain and France must take their military alliance to the next level to combat escalating threats. General Sir Nick Carter has paid tribute to more than a century of cooperation between the nation's armed forces, which are the two military heavyweights in Europe. We could challenge that comment with respect to the state of the UK armed forces at the moment. But he wants deepening links here, and his focus is on the importance of bilateral defence relationships. And this is what we were warning about a couple of days ago. Here he is boasting of meeting his French counterpart. The Times just says a two-day conference at the French embassy in London. But of course, this was the Franco-British Council meeting. We've got an article which will be out on that shortly. This is the dirty dealings behind closed doors, kept away from the British public. So this is what Nick Carter said. When I spoke alongside my French counterpart, General François Lecointre, at the Franco-British Council, my message was that we must take our alliance to the next level. Our collective security and stability depend on it. The democratic rules-based system that's been the bedrock of our security is being tested on many fronts, from confrontational states to the menace of terrorism. And he says new technologies, etc., must come in, and they need, and we need to diversify and intensify. So if you stopped the average person in the street, Mike, and said, are you aware we're in a rules-based democracy, what would they say?
What are you talking
what
about?
What are you talking about? So what we've got is a senior, the senior British officer, military officer, now using absolutely pro-European language in order to help stitch us further into a unified EU military structure despite Brexit. And as we pointed out the last couple of days, this nasty little charity, so-called charity, the Franco-British Council, is the one running these meetings where very high-level people are being brought together, Gavin Williamson there as just one, in order to create these bilateral treaties with the French, which are a stepping stone into the full EU unified military and procurement research and development structure. So this example of MBDA here shows how British firms Aerospace and British Aerospace and Marconi, drawn in to a European structure with the Italians, French and Germans, we're not leaving this structure as a result of Brexit. We're getting further into it. And I've pushed this out of as a tweet yesterday. And we know that this stuff is circulating. We are to believe that Czech has made a mistake in the Brexit documents and talked about the European Development Fund, when what they were really talking about was the European Defence Fund. So I don't believe that was a mistake at all. And what have we got? We've got theatre to the British public. And part of that theatre is this organisation, Leave Means Leave, which, of course, on its website claims that it's standing up for us to come out of Europe as soon as possible. Now, Justin Walker attended this event on Saturday, and he was able to make his voice heard. So we'll just have a listen to the clip, and then we'll bring Justin in for some comment.
Worst comes to the worst, and we do get forced into a position where we have to have a second referendum. I would like each... I would like to know from each of the panel whether they think we have anything to be afraid of. Can we start with you, John? Okay. Thank you very much for your. Thank you very much. There were a few questions submitted about the armed forces. We are very tight for time. I know it is a significant concern, but I want to fix very firmly on the scenario of a second referendum. John, please.
Can you hear me? Hi, Michael. Can you hear this? Can you hear me? Yes, okay. Well, first of all, let me say we're very conscious of the armed forces issue, so don't think we're not thinking about that. It's absolutely top of our agenda. We will win a second referendum.
Thank you. That's nice and simple. Chris?
The whole talk about a second referendum is a plan to delay and delay, to send a message to those businesses, don't invest in the UK. They want unemployment to go up, for our economy to be damaged, so we have to turn to the European Union for salvation. It ain't going to happen.
David?
Let me quickly deal with the armed services. NATO first and last is the answer for our armed services. That's what we support. Not PESCO, nothing else. Now, the issue of the... that there will not be a second referendum. If there were... If they were, judging by the people I meet outside London, in my constituency, north of England, judging by them, it would be 60-40 in our favour. So I think it would be much stronger than it was before. But the one thing I would say about a second referendum is this. Its impact would not be in changing the decision. Its impact would be in undermining the negotiation. Because the European Union would still like to keep getting our money. They don't want us to leave. So they would give us the worst possible deal to try to buy us such a second referendum. That's why it mustn't happen.
Thank you. Nigel?
I agree the point the gentleman raises. The fact that 3 Battalion, the parachute regiment, landed in Bosnia-Herzegovina 2 weeks ago with European Union flags on their arms, I think is a disgrace. And the sooner the government says we will not cooperate with the European army but put our faith in NATO, the better.
Well, credible piece of video some of the comments that we've had in the chat box. The man making or putting those questions to the panel was Justin Walker himself. So let's bring Justin in. Justin, an extraordinary event, and it's clear, and people have picked up on it, that your intervention seemed to really fluster the people on that panel. Tell us a bit about the day.
Right. I hope you can hear me okay. It was a fantastic day. About a dozen of us from the BCG, the New Chartist Movement, we went up there with some fantastic leaflets, and we gave out over 1,000 to all the awaiting people waiting to go in, and we had a tremendous good Lancashire response. I was actually born only 3 miles from the venue, so it was lovely coming home, as it were. And they were really friendly, and everyone was receiving what we were saying and reading the stuff. So anyway, myself and Eddie got tickets, and we'd actually got ourselves in. And we positioned ourselves down the side, so we could, standing, not sitting. There were about 2,000 people. It was a full house. And suddenly Eddie noticed that there was Nigel standing there, not doing anything, just standing. So I maneuvered my way round, went up to Nigel, shook him warmly by the hand and said, "Hello, Nigel." His two minders looked a little bit. He had two large chaps standing behind him, looking a bit nervous at what I was about to do. And so I said, "Look, I'm sort of representing the armed services because the PESCO process is increasing, not decreasing, as we come towards the so-called Brexit date." I said, "We are very, very worried. Morale in the armed services is at an all-time low. What is going on? And we need to highlight what's going on. So can I have your assurance that you're going to speak about this today?" And he immediately said, oh yes, it's very important. Yes, no, I will. And interesting, one of his bodyguards looked at me and gave me a sort of like a little thumbs up to say, yeah, like it, because I think they're both ex-servicemen. I don't know for certain, but they looked that way. So I then went back to my position down the side and then let Kate Hoey and all the others speak. Nigel spoke, David Davis, etc. The MP looked at Bolton Northwest, he spoke and everything else. But of course, no mention at all about defence, about what's happening to our defence industry, or nothing. And so I was a bit perturbed. So I thought, right, time for a bit of action. So I then sidled my way down onto the floor right at the front, and moved across gently without being sort of made obvious to where all the photographers gathered. And there was a gang of about 15 or 20 photographers all clicking photographs and taking them on the platform. And I sat amongst them. No one seemed to mind. Nobody seemed to notice. And then, of course, when she said, oh, well, we have some questions, I thought, oh, great. They were all questions that had been prepared beforehand. So, again, not one of the questions was about defence. But as you heard from Oakeshott later on, she said, oh, we did have some comments on defence. Anyway, so just as they were about to talk about the second referendum and everything else, I popped up and did my bit. And I'm glad I did, because obviously we did put a spoke in their wheels.
Justin, you obviously created a major spoke in the wheels there. Now, a few people are quite critical of the UK column because they say Nigel Farage is doing the job. I have said repeatedly he's not. What have we actually heard? You said that you discussed with Nigel Farage before this meeting about the problems in defence. He said he'd cover it. He didn't then cover it.
Yeah.
What is this organisation? Is it genuine? I see that it's got a .eu web address. Is that a joke or what? I'm not quite sure. But some people are asking, is this controlled opposition? Are these people really serious on getting us out of the EU? Or is it simply to get us out on the conservative rules-based international order and trade lines?
Good question. I think at this stage we have to give them some very, very difficult questions to answer. But I would like to say I opened last night their supporters. You can go online to Leave, and you can look at who these people are. Now, as you know, we're up against the what I call the corporate and Marxist deep state. We're talking about big business, central banks. We're talking about those who are powerful enough to meet in private groups like the Bilderberg and so forth, and to literally be able to control our politicians and pull the strings over them. And we know that child abuse and all the dreadful things can be part of that, blackmail or whatever. So we know what we're up against. We're up against this deep state that the main parties don't want to acknowledge, etc. Now, if you actually look at the makeup of Leave Means Leave, immediately, four of them, and I've got the names here so I don't get it wrong, the Right Honourable John Whittingdale MP, Lord Lamont, the Right Honourable John Redwood, and John Barron MP, all of them have had connection or employment by N.M. Rothschild. And then you look at all the others, and they've all been quite bigwigs in the City of London, or the corporations and insurance companies and everything else. They don't come across really as what I would call ordinary people. You don't see many from the trade unions. You don't see many from, you know, or voluntary organizations. It really does seem to come from the cream of the corporate world. So I'm immediately suspicious because, let's face it, the deep state does not want Britain to leave Europe. And as you, Mike, said right from the word go, day one after the Brexit vote, you said it's not going to happen. They're going to frustrate things. They're going to create the chaos. And well, that's exactly what's happening. And so my gut reaction at the moment is that Leave Means Leave is a controlled opposition organization. And their weakness is defense and the fact they are not discussing the complete how obvious it all is. I mean, just take the Royal Navy. You've got two capital ships, the two aircraft carriers. OK, when both of them become operational, we know that we haven't got the escort ships. The whole Royal Navy has become unbalanced to support two such capital ships. But merge them with the European navies and you have the perfect ability to have a deep sea fleet, all arms, etc., etc., etc. And we know that the French cancelled their replacement for the Charles de Gaulle aircraft carrier. And the replacement that they were going to have was identical to the Queen Elizabeth class. It doesn't take a rocket science to, and you know, it really is obvious when you look at it what's going on. And I'm afraid Nigel's, you know, he said, oh, it's bad news to have the patches on their sleeves, etc., free power going in. He said his little bit. But the truth is he could have said a lot, lot more, but he can't because this is the weak link that exposes that Brexit is not going to be allowed to happen.
Justin, excellent. Thank you for that. Now, with an eye on the clock, because we're getting a little bit short of time, but of course you've been working extremely hard with the British Constitution Group and the new Chartist movement to help people get motivated to get in contact with each other, to work in little groups without any form of sort of centralised control. Tell our viewers and listeners today just a little bit about what you're trying to do with the Chartist movement and what's the positive feedback so far from what you're trying to do.
Right. Well, the first thing is we do not want to get involved in the morass of what's going on in the political scene. You've got all these myriad of little parties starting to form. You've got the big parties, you've got splits down the big parties, you've got the far right reorganizing, you've got all sorts of things happening in the Labour Party, and all of it are distractions. So what we're trying to do is stand aloof from all this, because we've come up with the six requirements, and we want the six requirements to become mainstream, because every single politician, every single aspiring would-be politician have got to be shown these six requirements, and they've got to be made to give their opinions. If they cannot support those six requirements, they are working for the deep state. It really is as simple as that.
Right. Now, Justin, I appreciate you need more time for the detail on those six requirements, but give our viewers and listeners just the headlines, the single...
Okay. Headlines, I won't read from them. I'll just give them from my mind. First thing is our great charter, the Magna Carta. That's why we're calling ourselves Chartists. We have we the people are sovereign, not the politicians. We can annul bad legislation passed by Parliament. So it's taking back control from the politicians. That's number one. Number two is the Bradbury Pound, sovereign national credit. The fact the Treasury can create all the money it's needed for the prosperity and happiness of our nation without having to tax us and without having to go to the international banking sector, the central banks and so forth. Number three, it's all about exposing the sesquicuit, the alternative legal system that is in operation to deceive us, to basically entrap us into believing that we don't realize we have a straw man attached to us, which the City of London and others use to take advantage and to exploit and to take from us. So we need to expose to people what's going on there. Obviously, stopping the armed services and the police service from being undermined and being taken into Europe, and to restore them to being valued servants of the people. So that's something else. Child abuse. We want to stop all the dreadful child abuse that's going on. And again, we want to highlight in particular what is happening to Melanie Shaw, and the evidence from John Wedger. And finally, science. We've got 5G being rolled out. This is evil stuff. This is stuff that's going to muck around with people's health in an appalling way, and deliberately so. So we've got to wake up to fracking. There's another example. Science is being used against people. We want science to be used for the benefits of people. So that's the other very important part to what we're saying. When you look at the six taken as a whole, they would give us all a society that we could really be happy in, to be proud of, and to really work. But what they've got planned is the deep state. And if you can't support the six requirements, then you are a part of you're a useful idiot to the deep state.
Okay. Justin, thank you very much for that. For anybody who wants to go and visit the New Chartist website, I encourage you to do that, to have a look at these six requirements. Here it is. And this is not a political party. This is a way of helping to inform and educate people, but to show them in these six areas are key things that if members of parties or other individuals followed these six requirements, we could make a lot of progress in getting proper order and morality and common sense back into the UK. Justin, thank you very much for that. You've given us a very timely introduction by mentioning child abuse, and I think some of our viewers and listeners are going to be stunned at this. The Truth Movement, the Truth Project, which is the name which the Abuse Inquiry has come up with for its efforts in UK, is getting publicity because shortly they're going to move into Cornwall. Now, they made some claims which I picked them up on today. I spoke to one of their senior press team. This is the inquiry itself. I brought up the subject to Melanie Shaw, and I can tell our viewers and listeners today that Melanie is still in Stile Prison, where we understand that she's receiving medical attention, that is mental health services, but she has not been moved to an NHS facility. And we have very little information. And once again, it's clear that her legal team are finding it very difficult to get information. But when I asked whether the inquiry was going to speak to Melanie Shaw, and we got into a discussion about the fact she can't make the move because communications are blocked, an agitated and rather rude lady who was part of their media team said, well, what do you expect us to do? Break into the prison? I assure you that was her exact words, to which I said, well, I thought it would be more appropriate if the inquiry's legal team phoned the prison and spoke to the prison governor. But at the moment, it's quite clear that this child abuse inquiry does not want to speak to Melanie Shaw. And something that I find disturbing is this is the image that is now being used for the Truth Project. This is the image being used for the Cornwall Truth Project. And I would believe that for many people who've been through abuse, this is actually a sexualized image. I don't know whether I'm correct on this, Mike, but I'm deeply uncomfortable with it.
Well, I find it pretty uncomfortable as well. But aside from anything else, you can't be heard with a closed mouth.
Well, that's absolutely true. Now, this is the sort of report coming in from Cornwall Live, where they're saying the victims and survivors of child's sex abuse in Cornwall will have the chance to put forward recommendations for how to protect children in future as part of a national inquiry. There's nothing there about bringing people to book for their crimes. There's nothing about justice. This is about using victims and survivors to help make these what I believe are going to be nebulous requirements and recommendations as to how we can get it right in the future. This is the image that appears with that article. And this video clip, if you press it, then tells you how to get in contact with the police. I found this a very intimidating image. Again, if I was a survivor, and I would probably be deeply suspicious of the police themselves, many, many are, this is not come and sit down with a friendly policeman or woman. Yeah. This is a rather different message being pushed out, whether intentionally or not. But this is the bit that really caught me. This is a claim by David Poole, who's head of the Truth Project Cornwall and head of the Inquiry Office South West England. He said people from all walks of life experience child abuse. The experience his victims and survivors share with the inquiry will help us make recommendations to keep children safe in future so that institutions and individuals can never again say we did not know. Now, it's ironic that the inquiry themselves are constantly saying we do not know anything about Melanie Shaw. It doesn't matter how many letters are sent, how many emails are sent, how many phone calls are sent. The inquiry continues to turn a blind eye to Melanie Shaw. And then we get to this stage because this gentleman said people from all walks of life experience child sexual abuse. Whoever you are and whatever your background, the Truth Project is here to listen to you, except if you are Melanie Shaw, Mike, where this inquiry, well, is it an inquiry, simply refuses to get in contact with Melanie Shaw. And we now understand that they're refusing to put John Wedger on one of their panels, stating instead that they will only interview senior police officers. So pretty appalling stuff. And I'd bring in this one because several people picked it up. A very interesting article. It's unpleasant the moment you start to read through this. But police in the Midlands raising money for a charity. You could stay in one of the old lockups for a spooky experience. And this had been used to lock up a gang in the West Midlands early part of the 19th century who sewed razor blades into the peaks of their caps, and they were called Peaky Blinders because they would cut people about the face. But they also said, come and sleep where they have been held, Come and Sleep Where Fred West Has Been Held. So you can have a look at that screen yourself, but pretty unpleasant. The charity was this organisation, Hope for Justice. We're going to have a look at them in more detail in due course. This is their chief executive, who's almost an international star, come out of nowhere, Mike. But I have to say that when I called them this morning to ask for comment, they were very polite and helpful. And what they came back with was the original West Midlands police statement, saying that actually this happened because the promoters of the event made the decision to use the West and the Peaky Blinders. It wasn't the charity themselves. So I'm going to take that on face value. But I would like to tell our audience today that we've asked Hope for Justice whether they'll take on the Melanie Shaw case. And we'll end with the subject of a lady called Sabine McNeil. Sabine McNeil is another very brave child abuse campaigner. She did a lot of work to support the two young children abused as part of the Hampstead ritualistic abuse case. She has been brutalised by the British establishment. She's currently held in prison in a high security women's prison, Bronsfeld, on remand, waiting trial, which I think comes up in November. But today is her birthday. She's 74 years old today. So as with all of the campaigners who end up in prison, Sabine would enjoy receiving nice letters and cards. And if you feel you might be able to drop her a line, then please do. I will say that UK Column is now in reasonably regular contact with her, and she will have received a birthday card from the UK Column today. State of the nation, Mike. We don't want to talk about defence and EU military unification. We want to snigger when President Trump is at least saying that he's supporting not only America, but other nation states. And meanwhile, we've got this terrible situation of an inquiry set up by Theresa May into child abuse, which doesn't want to interview those who have got deep knowledge of that abuse. So pretty sick times for UK. We'll leave it there. Justin Walker, thank you very much for joining us. And we will be back at the same time on Friday. Bye-bye.